Okay, once again, thank you, Rabbi Weider, for joining us for Parsha Share. We have I'll send an email out, but we have a whole thing set up almost till mid-December. I think next week is Bernie Stahl, then Rabbi Moshe Bernstein. No, next week is Bernie Stahl,
and then
Rabbi Moshe Bernstein, and then I don't remember, but I'll send it out. Okay, without further ado, thank you, and...
What I wanted to do tonight's shiur is really two things. One is to review what I think is perhaps one of the most enigmatic sections of a parsha, which in itself is an enigma, and then to talk about one very specific pasuk in it, which is perhaps one of the most, maybe the most difficult part of the parsha, and to present four different approaches that the Rishonim, or the Medrash and the Rishonim adopted. Ironically, the last two of those approaches have parts of them that are echo in an eerie way much of some of the contemporary current events, let's put it that way. You'll see when we get there. The Torah has a section in Perek Daled, which it deals with Hevel and Kayin. And after Kayin kills Hevel, so he's afraid, he says to God, anybody's going to kill me, call Chayach HaMotzi Argeni. And so beginning in Pasuk Tesvav, Vayomer Lo Hashem, Lachein Kol Horei Kayin, Shivasayim Yukam. So this is actually a very difficult phrase to read, because it's not clear whether these are two sentences or one sentence. Rashi, some you may be familiar with, I believe, reads, Lachein Kol Horei Kayin, God doesn't say what will happen to anybody who kills Kayin. Semicolon, Shivasayim Yukam. He will be avenged after seven generations. He will be punished or killed or something like that after seven generations. So there are really two statements here. One is, what will happen to someone who kills Kayin? And the Torah actually doesn't spell it out. Rashi says it's many times the Tanakh, you have sort of an opening clause, but you don't have the finishing clause. You have if then, and then somehow the then part is missing. And then Shivasayim Yukam refers to Kayin's being punished, ultimately for his having murdered Hevel. He made for Kayin a symbol, and most of you are probably, if you're familiar with any interpretation of the Medrash, there are two interpretations. The one that's more famous is Rashi's interpretation. Os means God actually engraved a letter of his own name, I think a yud, on Kayin's forehead, and that was the symbol. There is, however, another tradition in the Medrash, which you'll see why it's relevant, is that God actually gave him a horn. And that was Vayasam Hashem Lekayin Os. Both of them seem to assume something on his forehead. Then, Vayetze Kayin Lefnei Hashem, Vayesha Beretz Notkin Mas Eden. So Kayin exits God's presence, and he dwells, and here's interesting, Beretz Not, I would have said, is a place, and Kidmas Eden is to the east of Eden. What's interesting here is that the Targum doesn't want, and this of course would be a problem, because Kayin would be in violation of God's edict, Navanat Tiyah Ba'aretz. So instead, the Targum already, Targum Unklus reads, Be'eretz Nod. He writes that he basically was living not in the land of Nod. He was living in the land. Nod means like Navanod. He was wandering. He wasn't in one place, which will be difficult because of the next verse. But and then, Vayeda Kayin Es Ishto. So Kayin is intimate with his wife. Vatahar Vateler Es Chanoch. He gives birth to Chanoch. One of the very interesting things, somewhat puzzling and enigmatic, and I'm not really going to deal with it here. I think there are ways of dealing with it. But if you look at the generations that are going to be listed for Kayin here, so you have Kayin, and amongst Shase's descendants, you have Canaan. And then he has a child, Chanoch, and there's a Chanoch in Shase's descendants also. And in the next pasuk, I'll skip for a moment, Chanoch has an Irad, we have a Yered in Shase's descendants, and Mechuyael, we have a Mahalalel, that's I think the closest, and then he has a Mesushael, we have a Mesushelach, and then finally he has a Lemech, which we also have, Noach's father was Lemech. So it's interesting, the names in Kayin's generations are very much parallel, almost identical, but not quite, to the names in Shase's descendants. In between that, what I skipped over is Vayhi Bona Ir, Vayikra Shema Ir Kishem Beno Chanoch. So Kayin apparently built a city, and he named it after his son Chanoch. Now this would in fact mark the first record we have of building of a city. I don't think a city then has the same connotation as it does today. We tend to think of a city like New York City, a very, very large place. Cities in the biblical period could be rather small places. I think the halachic definition of a city could be two chatzeros and three batim or something like that. It's pretty small. And many of the cities, many even medieval cities, many of them were very small. By modern day standards, you don't have, I don't know if you have any cities that even remotely compare to what typical cities are today. Teaneck would have probably dwarfed almost any ancient city. Almost. So, anyway, Cain is described as the first builder of a city. Pasuk Yutes, Vayikach lo Lamech shtei nashim. So Lamech appears, although it's not clear, to be the first one to engage in polygamy. In other words, Adam had one wife. According to the Medrash, Adam had two wives, but he had them serially. The first one was Lilith. She ran away. And the second one was Chava. The first one was created as his equal, and there was Zahar Nekeva Abraham. They were sawed in half. According to the Medrash, not your standard Medrash, it's one of the very much off the beaten track Midrashim. According to the Medrash, she didn't like being subservient to him. He wasn't happy that she wasn't subservient. She ran away, and instead God had to make Adam a new wife, and when he made him her new wife, it was Zos Hapam Etzame Atzamai Vasar Mibsari. So anyway, there is that fascinating Midrashic tradition, but Adam had one wife. And Cain appears to, as far as I tell, have one wife. Noach, in the parallel story, has one wife. But Lamech is the first one who has two nashim. And Shem Ha'achas Adav Shem Ha'shinis Tzila. The Medrash has its own comment on this. And this has permeated some of the Mefarshim, that he was the one who invented the practice of taking one wife for procreation and one wife for pleasure. In this context, one has to appreciate the Aramaic Tzila, that's you need the Hebrew. Tzila is the one who was always in his shadow. And the one Ada was the wife for procreation, who was really, the word in Aramaic, Ada, means to remove, to be sar, to be mesir. She was the one who was removed from his presence. Apparently, their methods of birth control didn't work entirely, according to the Medrash at least, because of Atelet Adah es Yavol. Adah gave birth to two children. The first one's name was Yavol. And here the Torah describes, Hu haya avi yoshev ohel umikne. He is described as the parent, the father, literally, of, it means the forerunner of, perhaps the founder of yoshev ohel umikne. What's a yoshev ohel umikne? So, you have to think from a... I think the Rishonim aren't necessarily fully aware of this, but if you think about human history, so human beings began as hunter-gatherers. That's how human beings began, which means you didn't have agriculture, nor did you have animal husbandry. And people generally didn't stay... You didn't stay as a hunter-gatherer, you couldn't build a house. You couldn't stay in the same place because as you consume the resources of one area until they replenish themselves, you had to move on. So here he's described as the Avi Yoshev Olu Mekneh. And Yoshev Olu Mekneh is not contemporary civilization, but it is at least a pastoral lifestyle where people had herds of sheep. The reason you have an Ol, not a bias, is because when you are, if you are like a Bedouin, again, you need to move from one area to the other, so you can't build a house. Instead, you build tents. So he is described, in effect, as the forerunner of the pastoral nomadic lifestyle. Then B'shem Achiv Yuval, Adah has a second son. Hu haya avi kol tofes kinar v'ugav. He was the forerunner of music. Now again, it seems to be a very, very strange description here, but you have to think as an anthropologist. Right? One can ask oneself many questions. Okay, there are people here who cook in the kitchen. Right? You make bread. And you wonder, how did people ever discover bread? In other words, you go to the store, you buy Fleischmann's yeast, whatever it is, but realize there's a lot of chachma involved. Who was the first person to make bread? Most of us don't make cheese, but I know people do make cheese. Who came up with the idea of making cheese? Music. Where did somebody come up with the idea of a musical instrument? Right? The whole system of music, where did it come from? Somebody has to have invented it. So here it's described Yuval. He's the ancestor who was the inventor of music. And then finally, Bitzila Gamhi Yaldas Tuval Kayin. So she gave birth to Tuval Kayin. It's not clear, I think, what the word Tuval means, but the fact that he does seem to be named after his ancestor. And what does he do, very appropriately? Lotesh Kol Charesh Nechoshes Uvarzel. He is the one who sharpens and produces, he's the smith of copper and iron, which means he's the first metallurgist, and perhaps more than that, He's the first weapon maker. And then finally, because again, that's a fundamental, it's a technological question. How do you have metallurgy? Chazal, by the way, were very bothered by the question as well. Does anyone know? Chazal answered the question. Maybe not to our satisfaction, but there's a very famous comment of Chazal, it's in Pirkei Avos, to explain the origins of metallurgy. And the things that are listed as having been created by Nashmashos, so I think there are 10 things, that at the end there's a Yesh Omrim, Tzvas B'Tzvas Asuya. Tongs were made, because normally when you see people working metal, you need metal in order to do that. So how did the first people who made metal, smelted, thank you, who smelt the metal, how did they do it if they didn't have metal implements? The answer is God created the first one. That's it. That's an anthropological comment of the Mishnah. So here, without telling us that, Tubal Cain is the Lotesh Kol Choresh Nechoshes Vazel, but he's appropriately named Cain because he creates the regular implements of death. Remember that Barzel in the Torah stands for the implement of death. You can't build a Mizbeach. With Barzel, both in Parshas Yisro and Parshas Kisavo. There's also a tradition, Chazal, that based upon the Pesukim and Masse and the Parsha of the murderer, that Barzel doesn't have a shear when it comes to Ritzicha. If you kill someone with a stick, but the stick was really not big enough to have killed them, you potter. But Barzel, it doesn't say Bechli Etziad or Be'even Yad, it says Bechli Barzel. Because Rashi quotes Chazal that Golav Yadul Fnei Misham Arai Olam, that Barzel is Memis Becholshim. So iron is the implement of death. And that's why Tuval Kayan is the inventor, because he is the great Einikol of the first murderer. And then finally we get this very interesting statement, Vachos Tuval Kayan Na'ama, that Tuval Kayan had a sister, and her name was Na'ama. Now this is really, really interesting, because this is the most puzzling, if you think about it from a Midrash perspective. Okay, that's nice, he had a sister, what did she do? Doesn't say what she did. You know, if it said that she was the first to pick a profession, she was the first one to sew clothing or something like that. Okay, doesn't even say what she was. Does anybody know, by the way, what the Medrash says about Na'ama? Noach's wife. Which creates a very interesting idea that even Cain's bloodline actually survived only through Na'ama, that Na'ama is Noach's wife. The Medrash is obviously first driven by the question of why tell us about Na'ama if you don't tell us anything, so that's where the Medrash is coming from. Now here comes, I think, what is by far the most puzzling part of the parsha. Vayomer Lemech l'nashav. Lemech says to his wives, Adav etzila shema an koli, Nishay Lemech ha'azeina imrasi. Ada and Sila, listen to my voice. Wives of Lemech, hear what I am saying. Ki ish haragti lefitzi v'yelad lechaburasi. For a man I have killed for my wounding, and a child for my injury. So, the pasuk is completely enigmatic. In the Medrash itself, there will be at least two readings. One, in the Medrash, there are two readings, but both of them assume that there's a question mark here. In other words, he's suggesting that, did I do X? I'm talking about what was that X. And then, even clearer, Ki shiva sayim yukam kayin, the lemech shivim the shiva. There are a lot of sevens here. But it says, because kayin will be avenged, whatever shiva sayim means, and Lemech was 77. Note, by the way, that how long did Lemech, Noach's father, live? 777 years. Okay. That's not this Lemech. And then, to close the parsha, in fascinating form, it's like everything that just happened, just said never happened. Vayeda odam odes ishto, vateled rein vatekra shemoshes, ki shasleh lehim zeracher tachasevo ki arago kayin. So Adam, now, the description of Adam's third son being born, and that is Shes, named because he was a replacement for Hevel. U'l'sheis kam hu yulad bein v'yikra shemo enosh osu chalek ro b'shem Hashem. So we have one final explicit first. Shes had a son whose name was Enosh. Oz, then, hu chal, it was begun, l'kro b'shem Hashem, to call in the name of God. And this last verse is also the subject of debate in Chazal. If you pay careful attention, you have to attend different minyanim in shul, but different balei kriya and the aliyah in different places. There are two. In fact, there are only two places, as far as I know, in the entire Torah, at least amongst every shul I've been in, every tikkun, every chumash I've ever seen, where the aliyah breaks, where there's a slight difference. Once in Parshas Truma, once here, which is rather amazing because the aliyah breaks did not begin as we have them. They weren't set down until probably sometime between the 17th and 19th century. No scholar I've spoken to actually knows when they were, because there's no evidence when it happened. But we know when it didn't exist. And by the 19th century, they exist, and they're amazingly standardized. But there are two that I've seen that where there's a difference, and one of them is in Brachos. So on Shabbos, there are two possibilities. Some of the Balei Kriya, this is what I learned as a child, the original Tikkun Korim, you know, the one with the blue and the gold lettering. So the men, at least, who remember that, probably looking at any of the men in this room, that was the Tikkun we grew up with. So that Tikkun had the parasha, had the Aliyah break at Vachos Tuva Kainama, and by Asu Chalik Rav B'Shem Hashem, there's no Aliyah break. Whereas probably the Korim, I don't remember what Breuer has, actually has the Aliyah break in Asu Chalek Rav Hashem Hashem. And these two traditions actually reflect the willingness to stop or not stop. But this pasuk reflects actually two traditions in the Medrash. Does Asu Chalek Rav Hashem Hashem refer to people started to pray to God in that generation, they found God? Or does that mean that's the first generation in when they started to worship Avodah Zarah? And if that is in fact the case, what is rather amazing, even though you wouldn't think that, you know that many times in Chumash the word Elohim is not Kodesh. Either it means judges, or in some cases it means gods, but it's Elohim Achirim. But this would be a case where Yud Kei Vav Kei actually is a Shem Chol, not a Shem Kodesh, according to that tradition in the Medrash. If, in fact, you understand there's a Shem Chol, and this refers to Avodah Zarah, then we don't like to end the Aliyah on bad things, and therefore somebody put the Aliyah earlier. If you understand this as Hashem Hashem Yud Kei Vav Kei Mamish, it really refers to God, monotheistic worship, then it's not a bad thing, and given that it's a Parsha break, it's a logical place to place an Aliyah. So, we have a Parsha then, with a whole bunch of firsts. First city, and you might call it the first murder also, but that's sort of that seems to be set off a little bit. We have the first instance of polygamy. We have the first instance of animal husbandry and the nomadic lifestyle, but with your own livestock. We have the first instance of music. The first instance of metallurgy and weapon making. And finally, the first instance of religion or idolatry. So the question is, what exactly is the role of this parsha? And it's particularly ironic because these are all from the family that was essentially wiped off the face of the earth. So the Malbim has a really striking comment here, and he writes the following: Ulam lo ahached. I'm not going to deny ki ledati bo hasipur hazeh keharbe sipurei haTorah. This story, like many other stories in the Torah, comes, it is like many other stories, Asher ba'u la'aker deos kosvos v'sipurei hevel Asher hispashtu b'mei kedem b'ein ha'amin. It's basically polemical. It's you know, the way the Rambam describes the purpose of Karbanos, but here the Malbim is not talking about a mitzvah, he's talking about stories whose purpose is, I would call, theological / polemical. How is that so? He said there were many stories that were found amongst the nations of old. Vasher him tziu kohaneho elilim, the idolatrous priests invented bimei hachoshech, in the days of darkness. V'yesh od hayom she'eris min ha-mythologia shelahem. There are remnants of that mythology that still exists. Shehayu miyachasim l'chol ish shehim tzi eza malacha kolach elohis. Anybody who invented some great branch of human activity was attributed divine powers. V'hayu omrim she'elil ploni himtzi yeshivas ohelu mikne. That this god, what we know at least from Greek mythology, goddess, transmitted this animal husbandry. V'elil ploni, and this idol, this god, himtzi chachmas hanigun, the wisdom of song. V'elil ploni himtzi tachsisei milchama v'umanos habarzelu klei milchama. And there, this god was the god of war, who invented weaponry. V'elu ploni himtzi binyan ha'arim v'ani musim ha'medinim. And this god invented, you know, cities and what you might call national practices, national entities and customs. V'sipru al kol echad min b'nei elim eile niflaos mitoldoso v'alahusa. And the mythology would contain stories about the birth of the gods and of their divinity. And they would have festivals celebrating them. By the way, think about the Greek muses, right? The Greek, not clear, three muses, nine muses. They are the ones who taught the humans about arts, literature, music, right? So these great chachmas are assumed to come from being secrets submitted by the god or goddesses, in the case of the muses, to human beings. Ulezeh hodiyah haTorah leMor al taminu b'shabnisa. The Torah is saying, don't believe in this nonsense. Du, you should know, ki hamamsi binyan ha'orim v'hanimusim v'kibbutz ha'medinei ha'yakayin ha'rotzeach harishon. You know who invented civilization, we might call it, cities? That was Cain, the first murderer. V'hamamtzi malachas ha'ra'iya, the one who invented shepherd, you know, animal husbandry, v'hamischar, and commerce, v'hanigon, u'malachas ha'barzel, song, and metallurgy, v'hamatchios, ha'yu b'nei lemech, b'nei b'nar shokayin. They were lemech's children. V'ha'isha, asher dibro alav gedolos, b'mythology shelahem, v'samur b'marom kina. Now, I don't know who he's referring to here, who the Malbim has in mind, but some famous female in whatever mythology he's thinking of. I have to imagine it was Greek mythology, but he hoisa nama achos tuval kayin. That was just, you know, I don't know what she did. That was just basar b'dam. Kulam hayu b'nei eid, adam lahevel dama lo b'nei Elohim. They were all human beings. They were not gods. This information was necessary in those days when these stories had spread out amongst all the nations. It lasted even after the Second Temple period. So the Malbim understands this section essentially as an anthropological polemic against Avodah Zarah. Now, I'm not suggesting for the Malbim, it's not clear at all that he doesn't regard this as historical, but certainly that issue is secondary to the goal of the Torah here. What you have here really is a tract of anthropology, historical or not, doesn't matter, whose purpose was to contradict a basic idolatrous tenet, which was a staple of ancient mythology. And the Malbim adds that, I mentioned before, Lemech was the first one to take two wives. I have a suspicion that polygamy was not about having one wife for procreation, one wife for pleasure. That would be my guess, but I'm not entirely sure. Okay, so the Malbim at least provides sort of a general sense for what the purpose of the section is. But that brings us back to the most enigmatic part of the section, which is, what is Lemech's soliloquy? What is his ode? What is he? He's asking his wives for something. The Targum writes here, on the bottom source, "V'amar lemech l'neshohi, adavet zila shema koli neshei lemech atzeisa lememri." That's just a literal translation. "Lo guvra katalis, I did not kill a person, the bedilei anas savil chovin, that for doing so, I should suffer for sins. V'af lo uleimo, and I chabelis, I didn't kill or destroy a child, the bedilei yishtei tzeizari, that because of him, my seed should be cut off." Now, what Targum Oklis seems to be assuming here, in the line with the Medrash, is that Lemech wanted his wives to be intimate with him. And they weren't interested. They were being partials. And the way the Targum understands it, and it would clearly emerge from the next Pasuk as well, is that he basically said, listen, I didn't do anything wrong. Now, what were his wives worried about? So presumably, it seems that they had a tradition, and the Medrash will state this explicitly, one version, that Kayin's, how do we read Shivasayim you come? So the way Rashi read it, in the standard Midrashic reading, is Lachain kol hori Kayin, anybody who kills Kayin, such and such will happen to him. But then, what will happen to Kayin? Shivasayim you come, and the understanding was that after seven generations, his seed would be wiped out. So his wife said, what's the point in having children? Right? After all, they're going to be destroyed anyway. Now, there is one problem, of course, with this interpretation, one obvious problem, is that Lemech's wives had already had children. In the Parsha, right, they give birth to A, B, C, D, and now his wives say, you know, why should we have children? They wiped out. It's like, that's like closing the barn door after the stampede. Like, why is all of a sudden objecting? And why does he have to persuade them now? So Rashi quotes, that is the second interpretation that Rashi quotes. Rashi, if you turn over the page, towards the end of the first source. Rashi quotes, it's in the last paragraph, Shivim Shiva. He writes on that line. He quotes the Medrash Tanchuma. I'll come back to that in a second. But he says, Umidrash Bracious Rabbah, Loharag Lemech Klun. Lemech, the first interpretation, Lemech did kill. We'll talk about that in a moment. But Loharag Lemech Klun, he didn't do anything wrong. But Venarshim Poshos Mimenu, Shbishakimu Perhuria. They already had fulfilled God's command to reproduce, but they didn't want to do any more. Lefishaniksir Agzera Lachalos Zaro Shokain Lachar Shivadoros. Because the decree had already been made that Cain's descendants will be wiped out after seven generations. And what did Lemech say? Who Amru Ma'ru Yodos LeBahala LeMachar HaMabul Ba V'Shote V'Sakol. What's the point of having more children for nothing? The Mabul is going to wipe them all out. Who Omer Lahem Lemech said to his wives, V'Chi Ish Haragti LeFitzi V'Chi Ani Haragti Eshevel Shaya Ish Bikoma V'Yelad B'Shanim. Was I the one who killed Hevel? Shehe Zari Kalaba Osavon, that my children should be wiped out? Uma Kayin Shaharag Nislalo Shivadoros, Kayin, who murdered. The decree was suspended for seven generations. Anisha Loharag Tilokol Shakain Shiyislubi Shmiyos Harbe, that God will wait for many more generations. And quoting from the Medrash Rashi says, "Vizel kavachom eshoshtus." That's a ridiculous kavachomer because imin kein haKadosh Baruch Hu goves chovo mekayim estaro. God has to wipe them out. So too bad that you didn't do anything wrong, but the decree had already been made. So this is ki ish haragti lefitzi v'yad lechaburasei. Is I didn't kill anybody, and his wife would have said to him, "Yeah, but you know, it doesn't really matter." The first interpretation of the Medrash, still in line with the reading of what happened. If you look at the beginning of Rashi, Shman Koli Shahayu Parshos Mimenu Mitashmish Lefi Shaharagis Kayim Es Tuval Bino Kayim Bino. How did that happen? Shahaya Lemech Suma, Lemech was blind. The Tuval Kayim Moshcho, his son Tuval Kayim was his guide. The Ra is Kayim. Tuval Kayim's job was his sighter. His job was to sight the prey and point Lemech in that direction. Now remember, according to one tradition in the Medrash, Cain had a horn coming out of his forehead. So he looked like an animal. And so Rashi doesn't quote that part of the Medrash, but if you look in the Medrash, Tuval Cain thought he saw an animal, pointed Lemech in that direction, and it turned out it was Cain. So, V'amar ro'es Cain and nidma lo kachaya, V'amar l'aviv l'msho pakeshes. He told his father to shoot. V'hargo. And he killed Cain. V'cheven sh'yada shu Cain zekena. When he realized, he went, oi! He kakaf al kaf. V'sik b'ex b'no b'nehem. V'hargo. He ended up killing his son Tuval Cain. He crushed him. V'ayunasha parshas imenu hu m'faisim. And he was trying to appease them. And he said to them, I didn't do it on purpose. V'chi ish harag to the fitzi. I was a shogeg. Right, I didn't intend to kill Cain. I didn't intend to kill Tuval Cain. So I'm a shogeg. And if for Cain, God waited seven generations, certainly for me, God will wait much longer. In other words, you shouldn't worry about me being punished, about your children being punished, because what I did was totally accidental. In line with Rashi's, with the Medrash's interpretation, so you have basically two interpretations. But as will be the case with all four assume that that Lemech's wives were not interested in him anymore. Because they didn't want to have children. And because they assumed the children would be punished. So in the first interpretation that we read, the second one in Rashi, the reason why the children would be killed is because God had decreed upon Cain's descendants eventually to be wiped out. According to the first interpretation of Rashi, Lemech himself did something wrong, but his taina was, it was an accident. And if God had such patience with Cain, certainly me. Now both of these readings are assuming Shiva Sayim Yukam refers to Cain being killed as punishment for killing Hevel. Ibn Ezra adopts Rashi's position, but he answers the question that I mentioned before in a slightly different way. Ibn Ezra writes, the Veda ki vayomer Lemech m'uchar b'parsha. He goes on to give other examples, but what Ibn Ezra claims is that the order of the parsha is out of order. In other words, Vayomer Lemech Lenashav was before the children were born. Ibn Ezra likes to do this a lot. Ibn Ezra is very comfortable. The Ramban always objects. But Ibn Ezra, probably more than any Rishon, is very comfortable using Chazal's principle of Ein Mukdam U'Me'uchar B'Torah. So basically, he says that Vayomer is Me'uchar, but really it comes earlier. Rashi answered the question differently, by the way. I said it very quickly. Rashi said, once they fulfilled Puravu, once they fulfilled God's command, then they decided they didn't want to do it anymore, because what was the point? Up until that point, they had to have children, because that was God's command. Okay. Anyway, the Ramban objects, not surprisingly, to Ibn Ezra's approach and to Rashi's approach. And he suggests a slightly different approach, which resonates a little bit with the contemporary political discourse, but not the hot button issue of today. That you have to wait to the Malbim. And I want to be clear, I didn't choose this because of the politics, it's just kind of interesting. The Ramban writes, ki haya lemech ishchocha me'od b'chol melechas ma'shabes. Lemech was a great craftsman. V'limeid levno ha'bechor inyan ha'mirek efi tivei ha'behemos. He was the one who taught his children all of these skills. V'limeid es ha'sheni chochmas anigon. He taught the second one music. V'limeid es ha'shlishi l'iltosh v'lasos charavos u'ramachim v'chanisos v'chol klei ha'mochama. He taught his third son how to make weapons. V'hayunashav mispachados. His wife were afraid shelo yanish, that he wouldn't be punished. Ki hevi hacherev v'haretzicha ba'olam. He brought weapons and murder into the world. V'yinehu tofes ma'ase avosa b'yado. He is inheriting. He is adhering to his ancestral practices. Ki hu ben hamiratzeach harishon. He's the descendant of the first murderer. U'baramash chislachabel. And he created an implement whose purpose was to kill. Ru'amar lahem, he said to them, ani lo haragti ish lefitzoim v'lo yela lechaburas kasher asa kain. I didn't kill anybody like my alter Zaydin. V'lo yani sheni Hashem, God won't punish me. Alva yishmereini min hariga yoser mimenu. If God protected Kain from being killed, he'll certainly protect me from being killed. V'hiskir kain lomar, he mentioned this as if to say, ki lo becherev v'chanis yachol adam l'harog b'tzoim v'chaburos. You don't need Cherev and Chanis. You don't need weapons to kill someone for wounding them. Sheyamis b'misa ra yosem and acherev. You can kill a person. You can carve someone up with a spoon. Ve'ein hacherev goreim haretzicha. Ve'ein halaoso chet. The weapon doesn't cause the murder, and the one who makes it isn't responsible. Now, a certain organization might have adopted the Ramban's line here, which is that swords don't kill people. Now, the question, of course, is who was right, Lemech or his wives? And that the Ramban doesn't say. But actually, so that's how the Ramban understood that his wives were parshas, not because this sort of abstract curse of Cain, not because of sort of this fantastical occurrence, but because he was the one who introduced weapons into the world. And that was, they thought that was a tremendous aveira. The Malbim presents the last approach. In the Malbim's comments, regardless of specific contemporary political events, and I'm not offering commentary on them, they resonate deeply, actually, in what I might say the world of Me Too. The Malbim was writing this 150 years ago. Vayomer lemech l'nashav, yisaper, shehagam shekayin yisad ir v'kibbutz medini. Despite the fact that Cain established a city and sort of a national being, v'tikein nimusim lahanheges hachevra, he instituted laws and customs, nimusim, for the way people should interact with one another. B'chol zos, despite Cain's having established all these norms, im lo hatfuna titen kola, if wisdom, it's a pasuk of Mishlei, doesn't give its forth its voice, v'im lo yiyu ha'anashim, if people are not bale yosher, va'ove tzedek b'tivam, if people are not civilized, those who love straightness and justice, lo yo'ilu ha'nemusim, having laws doesn't help. She'im yamid ish aretz, if a powerful person arises, and aretz is not just powerful, we might describe as a thug, yisachek l'chol chok v'nimus, he'll make a mockery of every law and custom. V'yigzo mishpat v'tzedek. I don't know if he means he'll steal justice and righteousness. I'm not sure what he means by that line. Shekein lemech nichto, Cain's descendant Lemech, acharei asher gavra zro'o, ayidei banav ugvurasam umemshaltam, once he began to dominate everybody else through his sons with their strength and their skills, Hayadarko lomar lenoshav, he would say to his wives, Atein, you, Adav Etzila, Shema Ankoli, the Al Tamru SP, listen to what I tell you and don't rebel against me. In parentheses, I don't know who put that in. Even if you weren't my wives. In other words, Adav Etzila, not Neshelana, Adav Etzila, you better listen to me. The Kol Shekein Acher, certainly. Kol shekein acher sha'aten nishelemech, and certainly since you're my wives, the ha'isha tzricha shetein anechnas labayla. A woman has to be subservient to her husband. This is lemech talking, not the malbim talking. Im kein hazena imrasi, ki im esa itchem ra. If I decide to do harm to you, miyatzil eschem miyadi. I control you. Halo ish harakti lefitzi. What does that mean? Ish echad asali peta. One person gave me a tiny boo-boo, a little petza, and what did I do? V'harakti yosem, and I killed him. U'be'es ha-hereg, nasan bi-chabura, and when I was killing him, he made a little wound in me, shikala mi-pitzi. He hurt me a little bit when I was murdering him. He gave me a little cut, and therefore, v'harakti gamas ha-yelet shel, I killed his son too. Ki ish harakti l'fitzi, v'yel l'chaburasi. V'lo hayami she'yakum kinegdi, v'yivakesh dama miyadi. There was no one who could stand up and avenge their death. Ki en mishpat negdi ba'aretz, ki zori rama. There's no justice in this land. My hand controls everything. V'yim tomahar she'e'onesh b'din shamayim, lest you say that I should be fearful of being punished by God. Alze ani meshiv lachem, that ki em kayin, the next pasuk, she'haya ha'rotzeach harisham. Kayin was the first, he invented murder. Becholzeh, Amar Hashem, Shemisha Yarago, so Yunakem Alach Hashem, that you can't kill him, and anybody who does will be avenged for sevenfold, or whatever that means. Kosha Kein Lemech. Now, notice by the way how the Malbim is reading. If I have to tell you this, by the Ramban, and the Malbim both read Shivasayan Yukam doesn't mean after seven generations. It means Kochain Kohore Kain, anybody who kills Kain, Shivasayim, sevenfold Yukam, he will be avenged. God said he would avenge anybody who killed Cain. Not, it doesn't refer to the avenging of Hevel's murder at the hands of Cain. It refers to the avenging of Cain's murder at the hand of anybody who would kill him. So he says, if Cain was the first one who invented murder, was God threatened to punish anybody who murdered him? Kosha kein lemech shu takif yosemi Cain, Moshe mimsharav, certainly lemech, I who am much stronger than Cain and rule over a much greater empire, Shemisha Yargenu, Yinakim, Shiva Vashiva Pa'amim. Kibanav Havadu Yiknut Maso. Be punished all the more so because Lemech's children and servants will take revenge. Velochain, Atein, Nishe Lemech, Guru Mipnechere, be afraid of my sword. Ki Asher Tamres Pi Tumas. Anybody who disobeys me will be put to death. Ubisle Yisaper, Echiatsu Bene Kayin Litarbus Ra'a, Visparu Beretzach. And by this the Torah explains how the descendants of Kayin went out, basically became uncivilized, and were proud of their murder. Ad shegames nishehem, so much so that even their wives, if chidu b'hereg v'tevach, they threatened their wives to kill them, v'chiniyum tachtam l'shvachos, they reduced them to servants. U'chemoshe noda shebimei kedem, hoysa isha kinyan bala, lasos ima kechavtza. So you can understand why this has so many resonances with contemporary events. And I don't, it's not a comment on the specific events of the day. It is fascinating, as Chaviva pointed out, I realize this also, she commented earlier, that the Malbim's assumption in his day is that women, in fact, were not supposed to be subservient to their husbands. The Malbim was not exactly a raging feminist, by the way, just as a point. And nonetheless, that was his observation, but it's the way he describes the behavior of Lemech. And so that's how he understands Lemech's speech. It wasn't Lemech pleading with his wives, as the way Rashi, both the versions of the Medrash and the Ramban understand, but rather it was Lemech threatening his wives, because, and the Malbim's basic point is that you can have laws, but if you have thugs who take over, having laws in the books don't mean anything. Those people can make a mockery of it. So that's how the Malbim understood this, different than any of the other Mefarshim. That was a very, very interesting interpretation. I do wonder a little bit what sort of stimulated his interpretation. I can't imagine it was current events of his day, but it is kind of. Although I shouldn't say that. That might not be the case. Maybe there were political issues that sort of stimulated this reading. So history perhaps sometimes is a way of repeating it. Yitzhak. But anyway, so that is at least a little bit of an introduction to this very, very, very odd parsha. I think it is by far the most difficult part of Bereishis. You know, after this, it's just genealogies and corruption of humankind. There's the creation. There's a story in Gan Eden. Not that those are easy stories, but at least you understand what the story is. What it really means is a different question. But you read this section, and this is like, you know, how does this fit what came before, what comes after, and even parts are difficult. So hopefully we have a little bit, when we hear the parasha read the Shabbos, a little bit more of an understanding and something to think about.